Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham, Fleck, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Skip Jack, and we are joined this week by all of our regular panelists to talk about the end of Spurs' title dreams. It's official with the 2-2 draw at Stamford Bridge. Tottenham's officially unable to win the title. Leicester City are champions. Some people might congratulate Leicester City. On Wheeler Dealer Radio, we are covered in salt. And we are not inclined to do that, so fuck them. But joining me, we have everyone here to talk about it. Leading us off, we have, my faithful sidekick, the man who did not abandon me in our darkest hour last week. We have Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you holding up?
I've already had my mourning period last week, so at this point, I am pretty okay. Trying to look on the positives and that sort of thing. It's not really working, but I've got beer to help me through it.
Next up, we have, just in addition to all the salt that he's adding to his diet with Leicester winning the title, he's just covered in cocaine. We have the veteran of our podcast. We have Brian. Brian, how are you holding up?
It's good. I'm actually great. I accepted that this would happen back in November, and I feel vindicated that I was correct.
Right is the most important thing.
Yes, everybody knows that being right is much more important than being happy. I think that's how relationships work.
And finally, coming to us from the gold-plated halls of Bristol, Connecticut, we have Hollywood Michael Cayley. Michael, nice of you to join us this week.
Oh, I mean, I'm going to have to leave about halfway through. I got to ask to be on a bigger podcast.
Yeah, I know. We just appreciate you working us into your schedule and, you know, the way you just plug us every – it's just – we really appreciate it. How are you holding up this week?
I'm feeling pretty good. I was parenting during the second half of the match, so I was sort of I was a little bit in and out. I had to give a kid a timeout and
Did your wife have to give you a timeout?
No, exactly. I did a better job disciplining a 2-year-old than Mark Clattenburg did, with his job with adults. So, yeah.
In fairness, your 2-year-old probably didn't call you a cunt.
Probably. Yes. Sam's got a pretty impressive vocabulary.
You're making quite a lot of assumptions there, Brian.
I don't know. I don't know what Michael's house is like. I feel like it's very conservative. They don't use that kind of language. I don't know.
He was mostly like jumping up and down in his crib.
A lot of two-footed tackles.
He really did shoulder barge another child to the ground. That was why he got a timeout.
Just Eric Dyer. Have you been showing him Eric Dyer vines? Is that what's been going on here? Okay.
That's mostly what we watch. It's just like crunching Van Bommel tackles over and over and over again until he learns how to play midfield.
So, all right, let's talk about this game. Michael, I'll start with you because you have still watched more of it than the rest of us. It was an impressive first half from Spurs, two really good goals, especially, Lamella just had this incredible pass to set up Kane for the first goal. I mean, just a really good performance, and then it really changed at the half. I mean, what happened? I mean, it seemed like, I think Chelsea is just the sort of more, like, better at being a cynical, dirty team than we are, but I mean, it just sort of came apart for Spurs in the second half, right?
Yep. What's kind of interesting about it is that there were sort of two things that happened which are separable. And the thing that really killed us was that because the one thing that happened is that with Clattenburg failed to control the game and our players completely lost their heads under what Chelsea were doing to them. I think that the ha-ha Clattenburg thing is kind of funny because he did do a bad job, but what he did a bad job at was restraining our very violent players from committing acts of violence. And so it's kind of hard to be like, oh, poor Spurs, our players had no choice but to try to kill everyone. But that happened. But that isn't really why we gave up two goals. Neither of the goals that Spurs conceded had anything to do with sort of guys getting riled up. It was that they had a nice set play routine that we didn't defend very well, and the ball bounced fair, and they got a lucky bounce for Cahill.
And Dyer was being like held down.
Well, yeah, but that's a set play. Yeah, I know. Vertonghen was hugging guys the whole game, but and then Eden Hazard created a goal that was maybe more impressive than many of the many goals he created last year. And so, you know, they played very, very well at a couple of key points. And the two can be, you can sort of create a narrative that fits them together. Like, oh man, Chelsea got up for the game and they set us off. But it was kind of two separate things that happened. They played very well in the second half, and they wound us up. And both of those things, I mean, I think that their winding up is why Spurs were not able to really mount any kind of comeback.
Or put them away once they scored their goal, yeah. I would agree with that. I want to talk a little bit about Spurs losing control. I know that's not the reason we lost the game, but it's certainly probably why we didn't mount a comeback. I mean, Ben, you've seen some of the, just, I mean, Eric Dyer, like the fact that he did not get red card in this game is nothing short of a miracle. Just throwing in ridiculous tackles. I mean, Dembele poking Costa in the eye. I mean, obviously some of this is not good, but I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about Spurs' sort of loss of control and very, very physical performance?
I mean, it's nice to see that sort of fight, but you'd like that to be directed in a little more focused manner, I guess.
Well, I think it's impressive that the media has been able to somehow combine the narratives of typical Spurs, always soft and losing control of games, with like, oh, look at these violent thugs who are going in too hard. They managed to combine these narratives in a surprisingly coherent way, and which is really annoying and aggravating, and I'm very sick of it already.
Yeah, I mean... watching that video of all of our disgusting tackles is probably the best part of the game, I think, for me.
Especially
we're not going to win. At least we're going to injure. My favorite tackle, I think, is when Danny Rose cleans out Willian, and then Willian gets in his face, and Danny Rose is like, "Bring it the fuck on! I will kill you." I think is my favorite tackle.
Don't forget, the best tackle of the game might be Danny Rose taking down Gus Hiddink in the tunnel, apparently. Which, you know, kudos, Danny. Don't let old age or, you know, society's standards stop you from showing that guy what the business is. That's, you know, good for you, Danny. You've come a long way for Spurs. But seriously, no, I really did enjoy that. That makes me happy. I don't know. Dyer in particular. I don't think there's a player that sort of lost control more than Dyer, because I don't have a problem with him trying to murder several Chelsea players on the pitch because they're Chelsea players and fuck them. But, I mean, Brian, do you think this is a problem, or do you think he's walked away from that line enough this year that just this game got the better of him and he's a young dude and he'll get better at this sort of thing?
I don't think it's a problem. I mean, you know, young players put in rash challenges, young players who are converted from central defender to defensive midfielder do dumb things to win the ball back on occasion. If you want to talk, if you want to say that it was the pressure of the situation, or if it was Costa and Fabregas being themselves, or, you know, whatever it was, it's not something that I think is going to be kind of a continuous problem for Eric Dyer, because most of the season, while he has put in some, you know, kind of rash challenges, they haven't been as bad as some of these were today on Monday.
Usually it's an isolated thing, as opposed, like, he just sort of gets his blood up and throws one in. It's not an organized terror campaign like this was.
Right. And he seems to know where the line is and to be able to back off it once he's been yellow carded. I mean, he hasn't been sent off at all this year, but he's still gotten, you know, I think the number's, 10 yellow cards in the league at this point.
Mm-hmm. And he cut way back on the yellow card tackles after the first couple months, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, he was at six after the first month and a half, I want to say.
Yeah.
You know, so, I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think, you know, look, you have a team full of proven instigators, and you have a situation that is ripe for instigation. You have a referee that, like Michael said, didn't really control the situation from the beginning, and you just kind of wound up with that. And you know, that Spurs are a team that instigates too. And so we, you know, compounded the situation, and that's just what we end up with. You end up with nine players being yellow carded or whatever the Premier League record. And well, so,
and even then it might not have been enough. I mean, Michael, I want to go back to this with you. I mean, how bad was this referee performance? Cause you know, a lot of people talk about like, oh, just let them play. But the problem with that is very early in that match, it was established that you could get away with a whole lot. So by the time he starts drawing cards out of his pocket, you know, it's, everyone's pissed. It's, you know, it's an emotional game anyway, cause you've got the most, you know, the pettiest team in the world playing a desperate, you know, team full of instigators, like Brian said, and they've had about 60 minutes where they've learned that about anything is going to go today. And all of a sudden it crosses a line, and it's, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if Spurs' behavior is excusable here, but certainly Clattenburg should have done a better job, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the moment that I was like, this is going to go badly, was there was I think that there was a moment in something like 15 minutes in or so where Danny Rose just utterly cleaned somebody out down deep on the wing. And it was a yellow, it was a clear yellow card tackle, but a couple, Ivanovic had gotten away with a yellow card tackle before. A couple other guys had gotten away with bad tackles. And Clattenburg does this super performative, everyone look at me, Mark Clattenburg, Premier League referee. I'm about to show this young man the business. You young man should not do that again, or I, Mark Clattenburg, will punish you, for I am in control of this match. Look at me on these cameras as I show how strong I am. Begovic takes the free kick, sends it long. Costa and Rose go up for the ball. Rose undercuts him, gives him a little shoulder in the small of the back, clearly fouls him. Like, this is the most nailed-on yellow card ever.
He just aggravated the referee. He just committed a foul.
And nothing. And it was like, oh, God, this is going to go very badly. And so, again, this is really bad refereeing. I think that Clattenburg was like, it was like a parody of an English referee performance where, you know, actually refereeing the game comes somewhere like 10th on the list behind how you look on TV.
Yeah.
But again, the problem is that Danny Rose was incredibly stupid. And then our players did lots and lots of dumb things after that,
yeah,
getting wound up. So, again, like, this is not like the thing I want to emphasize about this is like, oh my God, our players were treated poorly by the referee. That's loser talk. Our players are a bunch of assholes who kick people, and that's one of the reasons they win games. And that's great. I love how many shit weasels we have on this team. But in this case, the referee did do a bad job.
I mean, I think the thing is like, you know, you have to have some sort of edge to be that really good team. But you also have to have the wherewithal to understand how to not get drawn into these sorts of games. And, you know, we had nine players with yellow cards. We had, you know, I think Rose, Walker, Lamella, Dyer all probably could have been sent off. But then you look at the other side, Chelsea only got three yellow cards, which I think is interesting, because I mean Fabregas and Costa both probably deserved at least one. Willian maybe could have been sent off. I mean, it could have been an absurd game that ended up with, you know, Spurs having
pitch
against 10.
If Clattenburg's taking cards out of his pocket early in the game, if he's calling one of those fouls on Danny Rose, you know, hopefully that puts sort of a, you know, that draws the reins back on both teams, and they realize, all right, we have to dial it back a little bit, or someone's going to get sent off. But you know, by the time he starts,
I don't think it would have though. I mean,
by the time he starts drawing his cards out, everyone's already pissed and their dander's up, and you know, it's too late. And I don't know. It's just
I think even if he would have been calling it tighter from the beginning, I think we still would have wound up with two guys sent off.
Probably, but I don't know. It's like you said, Brian. Teams need that edge, and I think that's what you said. Like you said, it's what makes Spurs so good. I mean, there's I mean, it's harder to find guys on this team without that edge. And I think you look at a team like Arsenal. I mean, we talk about Eric Dier, and he's like everything you see with him, whether it's games with Dele Alli, whether it's games on the training pitch, whether it's what's actually going on during games. That guy's a stone cold killer. I mean, he wants to win, and he's willing to do shitty things to win. And I don't know how many guys on Arsenal I could say that about. And I think it's one of the reasons that that team has kind of slid over the last 10 years. I don't think they have got enough guys with that mentality. I know this is all intangible bullshit, but you know, I think it's one of the things that makes Spurs so good this year. And the problem is you got to find the right balance with that. And this game was too far on the other end. I mean, Ben, do you think Brian, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, you know, you look at the players that Arsenal had that invincible season with, and you had Saul Campbell and Torre and Jens Lehmann and Patrick Vieira, and like you had a bunch of shit weasels on that team, and Thierry Henry, and you know, so like it's demonstrable that they have, you know, who's their guy now? Is it's Coquelin, and that's the only one that seems to have any sort of edge or attitude.
I guess Flamini, but he's also bad enough.
But that's all like undirected, just you know, chaotic energy. Like he just exists to hurt people. Like that's not having an edge.
Mm-hmm.
He's just shitty at football.
But not at developing energy companies, apparently. I mean, Ben, are you concerned about this moving into next season? The sort of way Spurs played. I mean, do you think this is a problem, especially now that maybe teams look at this game and think, "Oh, well, if you wind Spurs up enough, you know, they'll lose it, or they'll lose themselves."
No, I just flat out no. That's not a concern to me at all. That's still the analysis I'm going to give. No, I mean, yes. Like, do we need to get better about like keeping our shit together when things aren't going well? Absolutely. Is that going to be like an Achilles heel that teams are going to exploit? That's going to cost us? I don't think so at all.
Do you think you can chalk this up to how young the team is?
I mean, yeah, young, inexperienced, like a bad refereeing. Like, there's a lot that went into that.
I think it's interesting that nobody spun it into like a critique of Hugo Lloris as captain. Because that's always the sort of thing that comes out in the English press after, you know, performances like this where, oh, had stronger leadership or a captain who was actually, you know, an outfield player, stuff like this wouldn't have happened. Or I'm surprised no one has spun this into a huge critique of the leadership at Spurs.
Everyone loves Hugo, though. I think.
How can you not?
I think because it was a long shot, there's going to be less finger pointing here. Also because, let's face it, when's the last time we've been seriously talking about a title with three games left to go in the season? I mean, I think you're just going to see less finger pointing as a result of that. All right. I want to look at this step back a little bit because this is the second week in a row we've sort of had to take stock of Spurs and their season because now it's officially over. We're not going to win the title this year. Spurs fans might be feeling down about this, but I mean, Michael, let's start with you because you weren't on the pod last week, big timing us. But I mean, how should Spurs fans take this year? You know, I mean, really the only thing left to play for at this point is St. Totteringham's Day, and that looks pretty achievable. That's ours to lose, it seems like. So, I mean, how should we be looking at this season?
I'm sorry, I'm on the other line.
Okay, I'll come back to you in a minute.
this season, I mean, like, you know, the sort of simple way of putting it is, you know, a year ago we were watching a team that made very little sense collapse in games down the stretch that didn't matter. A year ago, we had massive holes on a team, and you know, we weren't sure exactly how we felt about Pochettino. We certainly didn't think that. This season has gone fantastically well, and this season has gone fantastically well, not because a bunch of like old guys happened to have big years or because a bunch of people had like hot finishing, because a bunch of players developed into quality football players that we can expect to be quality football players in future years, because a bunch of players learned how to play within Pochettino's system, which is clearly a system which is going to work at this level. It's not going to suddenly get found out because we're doing something weird. It's a highly structured and tactically sound way of playing. You know, this season can't be anything other than a huge success so long as we beat Arsenal.
Ben, how important is that to the overall memory of this season, beating Arsenal? Finishing ahead of Arsenal, rather.
I think it's essential. Like, you know, a third place behind Arsenal, that's like, that's a very good year. Finishing ahead of Arsenal for the first time in 22 years, that's an achievement. And, you know, we don't have any trophies to remember this season by. We don't have a lot of tangible successes other than, like, yes, this is an exciting team. We don't have anything to, like, point to and say, this is a milestone, we did something great. I think finishing ahead of Arsenal in a year where they were kind of favorites for the title after a minute, you know, I think that is the kind of thing we can be proud of and look back on. Finishing third doesn't feel that way. I mean, people talk a lot about how, like, Spurs bottled it, like the title was ours and we blew it. Like, that's not really the case. We were never in pole position. We were always playing catch up. But finishing second, like, that is ours to lose. And, you know, that will raise some questions about who we are as a team and how successful we were this season. So, yeah, I think we absolutely have to finish in second for me to consider this a success. Because even though no one would have expected even third place at the beginning of the season, like, those expectations change as the season goes on. And I think we have a right to expect that this team closes out the season strongly and finishes in second.
When we started the year, we, you know, thought we might finish fifth. Now, like, I mean, we look like, on form at least, the best team in England. And, you know, it's, yes, finishing above Arsenal is very important. I agree with you, Ben. Brian, how worried do the – so coming out of the Chelsea game, it looks like Eric Lamella and Moussa Dembele might miss the rest of the season in the first game and next. How vital is that going to be to Spurs' push to finish above Arsenal?
I mean, they're both definitely very important players. I mean, I don't.
We should clarify. As of the time of this recording, like, no news has come out about either of them, so we don't know what's going to happen. But continue.
But I mean, you know, I mean, the importance of those two specific players can't be undersold. So, I mean, you know, if we're already without Dele Alli and then we're without Eric Lamella, then that means Nasser Chadli, I guess. You know, on perhaps on a brighter side, that means Clinton starts the last two games, which I think would be preferable. But, you know, and then what do you do about potentially missing Eric Dier?
Or rather
Dembele. You know, I guess that means Tom Carroll and Ryan Mason. So, I mean, I don't know. I think I really do believe that Arsenal are not going to surpass us. I think that no matter who we put on the pitch, we have enough to at least finish level with them and ahead of them on goal difference.
Which is ahead of them.
Right, exactly.
All we need to do, if Spurs win another game, that's it for Arsenal. They're not catching us.
Yeah, and I mean, I really think that, you know, I don't know. I don't want to believe that there's a world where they can catch us. But I didn't want to believe that there was a world that Leicester could win the title in. And, you know, I think we'll be fine.
Michael, how worried are you?
Yeah, I'm emotionally worried. You know, it's four football games and lots and lots. You know, we've seen what can happen. Weird enough things happen in an individual football game that four of them, you know, super weird things could happen. But there's not really any reason beyond, oh my God, random shit could happen. There isn't any reason to think Spurs can't win either home to Southampton or at Newcastle. Those are teams that Spurs can and should beat easily, even with Ryan Mason in midfield, especially with Southampton being a home game.
Jesus. Ryan Mason in midfield. Ugh.
Nothing good can happen.
Ben, what do you think, so since we're talking about him, I know you hate Ryan Mason, but where do you think Ryan Mason is on the pecking order in this club right now? Because he hasn't started a game that wasn't a cup match in forever. Pochettino is only using him as a late substitute, and before recently he was basically using him as a victory cigar. Do you think he's got a future on this team? Do you think we're going to get rid of him, or he would like to go get starting minutes at a, like, Newcastle-like substance?
I mean, it's really hard to say. At this point, he's clearly, you know, I guess our third choice central midfielder. So, assuming Pochettino's not crazy and buys one, you know, he'll be even further down the line. I don't know if he's the kind of guy who wants to leave to go get first team minutes or if he's happy to play a squad role at Spurs because that's where he came from. I have no idea. I don't really know who would want him or who would pay us for him.
Some English team would want him. Like, we could give it someone.
I can't really predict what that's going to look like. So I don't know. I hope he leaves, obviously.
Ben, how worried are you about the not finishing above Arsenal with your family situation?
Very, very worried. I do not want that to happen at all.
Is your marriage going to survive either scenario here?
Yes, because I'm much crazier than my wife is. I mean, I think the thing is like, Arsenal fans have pretty much resigned themselves to the fact that we were chasing the title, that we are finishing above them. If we don't, that just makes us look hilariously stupid. I don't think they have any expectations. Anything that happens is a bonus.
I think you underestimate. I think when the reality of it hits them, it's not going to be a good day for Arsenal fans.
No, nor should it. But I think they've made their peace with it a while ago, or at least some level of peace with it, that it's not going to be like the crushing blow that it will be to us if that happens, you know, with the two games to go.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Ben, I want to follow up on that with you just because, like I said, you are more aware of Arsenal fans than we are. I mean, how irritating is this going to be for them? Because there's a certain element, like we were throwing it at Chelsea fans, like, oh, the highlight of your season was, you know,
drawing Spurs.
Yeah, handing the title to Leicester, basically, drawing to Spurs. That was the highlight of your season. And, you know, a lot of Spurs fans are talking about, oh, that makes you a small club and all that. I mean, is it going to – we're going to see that from Arsenal fans, but, I mean, how bad is this going to be for Arsenal fans if it actually happens?
Very. I mean, you've already seen them melting down over Wenger and the club kind of eating itself a little bit with Wenger blaming the fans for costing them the title. I mean, it's kind of a shit show over there. They're going to try and play it off like we're the small club for celebrating this, but, like, they celebrate it every year so they can go fuck themselves. I think the fact that they're going to act like it's not a big deal is, I think, more of a testament to how big of a deal it is that they just can't face that reality than anything.
It's the problem with when you're the big guy who's traditionally on top, like, and you're going to make fun of the other team for always finishing below, you better be fucking sure that other team doesn't finish above you because you're going to eat a ton of shit if they do. And hopefully Arsenal's going to eat a ton of shit in the next week or two because it's going to be real fun to rub that in their face for at least a year. Hopefully many more. Looking ahead, Tottenham's in the Champions League. I think officially, if I'm not mistaken, Tottenham's officially in the Champions League. There's no way that's not going to happen next year now.
Well, qualifiers.
There's no way we can not, yes. But let's assume for the sake of argument, we're in the Champions League next year. I don't think we've had this podcast since Tottenham has been in Champions League. I mean, Brian, how stoked are you to actually see, in theory, group stage Champions League games for Spurs next year?
Super stoked, bro.
Come on, brah.
Yeah,
Gonna pound some Bud Lights, watch some Tottenham play some soccer.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to send White Hart Lane out kind of in its final season.
Except I'm excited. We might not actually be playing at White Hart Lane in the Champions League, which would be super bullshit.
Yeah, that would be super shitty. But, you know, I mean, I think it's great for these young players. You know, I don't think anybody on the team is around from the last time that Kyle Walker, I guess, would be the only one that was played in the Champions League last time around.
No, Hutton was starting back then. He was on loan, wasn't he, to like Villa or something?
No, surely not.
Yeah.
Yes. 2011, 2012, I think, was Walker's first year with us.
I know Hutton was at the San Siro with us. So.
Okay, so nobody that was on the team played last time we were in the Champions League, which doesn't seem right, but it must
Harry
be.
Harry Kane was there cheerleading.
Yeah, and Ryan Mason, too, probably. I think this is a great experience for them. I think it's going to be a big deal. I hope we get drawn into some really fucking difficult group with like where we have to play, you know, Barcelona and we have, I don't know, Bayern Munich, They'd obviously be in the same pot, but whatever. I hope we get some crazy hard group with some huge teams that have to come to White Hart Lane.
Not if Barcelona loses the title, we could definitely get both of them.
That's true. So you know, I'm just really excited for the big European clubs to come back. I mean, you know, the atmosphere for the Dortmund match in the Europa League this year was amazing. So I just want that to be, you know, back at White Hart Lane in this last season. I want the kids to experience that. I want to see Pochettino manage the squad through the Champions League. He's never managed in the Champions League before, so I think this is what we need to progress, and I'm super excited about it.
Michael, how much do you think playing in the Champions League is going to affect Spurs next year in terms of versus how Europa League affected our matches this year? Because I think the schedule's actually a little bit kinder going from Tuesday or Wednesday to Saturday. Certainly, if there's anything beyond exciting European nights that I'm fucking excited about, it's not having as many matches on a Sunday this year, so I'm pretty
well,
goddamn stoked.
A lot
about
of
that.
Champions League teams play like Wednesday, Sunday, or
we're not
going to
play on nearly as many Sundays as we did this year.
That's true.
So, I mean, how do you think playing in Champions League is going to affect us, Michael, versus, you know, how the Europa League was for us this year?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, again, it should be a relatively marginal difference, but it is going to require Pochettino to do a bit more first team squad rotation, which is something that he has done reasonably well in a couple of key places, but he hasn't had to do it too much. He mostly ran out. He ran out relative B teams, and now we're going to have at least, I think, four or five matches where we're going to have to send out basically something like an A team in the midweek during the groups and be able to still play, still compete in the league. It's a hard problem, and it's a hard problem that requires us to sign some better players, especially in central midfield and preferably also at right back. But I think that right now, I am in a very, very happy place with Pochettino, and I think he's going to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, like, one of the big things we've talked about is the need for depth more than anything to reinforce the squad, and that should make the whole process easier when our B team isn't Ryan Mason and Nasser Chadli, but it's actual good players.
Yeah, and we've seen some reports coming out about, like, legitimate reports, Spurs are targeting a striker, Spurs are targeting a center back, Spurs are targeting a central midfielder. So hopefully, and I don't even give a shit if it's a black box, Kevin Vimmer-style purchase, as long as we're getting good players and understand that we need to get guys who are going to get significant minutes, I'm fine with it. And I just hope we recognize that. And God, I hope it's not Ryan Mason. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but, I mean, Ben, you've been a Spurs fan longer than I have. Michael, I guess you're the closest in terms of Spurs fan time put in to me. But I don't think I realized how special the Champions League was the first time around. So I'm very, very excited to see it this time. And I hope we get some, you know, I hope we're getting at least one or two really big ties that we'll, you know, I don't know if I want, you know, what we had in Milan where we were down 4-0 and then we score three goals. But, you know, I hope we have some memorable matches this time around. And I hope it's the first of many under Pochettino. It would be nice if this became a regular occurrence and not every couple of years. So on that note, we're going to move on to some questions from our listeners. Our first question comes from Dustin Keitner. Dustin, that is a, you know, you shouldn't be creating alt accounts. You know, that's against the rules. But he asks, Michael, I'll start with you on this. This is from, asking, is Pochettino becoming one of the two play for managers in the world? He talks about guys like Mourinho, Pep, and Ferguson, where they're destination guys. Obviously, he's not on that level. But with the way he's promoting youth players and sort of what he's done to elevate Spurs, do you think we're getting to the point where playing for Pochettino is enough to maybe put Spurs over the hump on getting certain players?
Maybe. I mean, I think there are exceptions, but for the most part, I think that, like, I get to play for this manager is the sort of thing that players say in press conferences. It's like saying the schools are really good in Colorado if you signed a $200 million contract. Like, you know, these are the sorts of happy talk that fans and teams like to hear. I don't think that they drive player decisions that much. At the margins, maybe, sure. You know, Pochettino's done a great job. And what I think does make something of a difference is that Pochettino and Tottenham have committed to giving guys who are 19, 20, 21 years old regular important minutes. That, like, guys like Dele Alli and can see, you know, the next Dele Alli. I mean, we can't. You know, the next very good young player that we try to sign, you know, a Moussa Dembele from Fulham kind of guy, can see that coming to Spurs means you get minutes. I think that matters. I think that, you know, all the happy talk about, like, oh, I'd love to play for him. Oh, I'd love to play for those fans. How much they believe in everything. It's a little bit of happy talk for me.
But you think when, you know, Moussa Dembele the younger is, like, trying to decide on an offer between West Ham and Spurs, and he knows he's actually going to get minutes at Spurs, that could make a real difference.
I mean, it's like the draw of Pochettino goes into the draw of playing for Spurs, playing for a Champions League team. You know, it's all kind of part of the same package. It's not like, you know, it's not like we're in West Ham's position and we're like, oh, Pochettino is going to be the difference. It's like we already have all the things that are the real difference makers.
Mm-hmm. Right. And money.
Right.
Although not as much as we would like. Our next question comes from Shooting Boots on the site. Ben, this is for you. Are we not shutting games down? And how can we address this?
I mean, we kind of talked about this last week. Like, yes, it is a thing that's happened. I don't know how much of it is, you know, just being unlucky when we have chances and not scoring, and how much of it is actual game management. I think, you know, it's one of those things where when our bench is Ryan Mason and Nasser Chadli, you know, it's hard to make those changes to respond to a change in the, you know, game situation. You know, we don't have someone that we can bring on and, like, steady the ship or bring on to give us that extra oomph to take us over the hump. You know, I think more than anything, that seems to be our biggest problem here. That and, like, just the general unluckiness of finishing streaks, than anything Pochettino himself is doing wrong.
All right, this one's for the good of the order. Everyone can chip in. What was your favorite tackle from this game last night?
Well, I've already said mine was the Danny Rose William bust up.
Brian?
It's got to be the Eric Lamella step on Fabregas's foot or hand. Just I don't know if that counts as a tackle, but I'm going to go with that one.
I think that's acceptable. Michael?
Eric Lamella picked up a really sweet yellow card. I think it gets lost a little bit. I think he came in, like, from behind on, I'm going to say, Ivanovic. Somebody deserved it. It was good.
I think there's, like, three tackles that Eric Dyer was just trying to break someone's shin in half. And, you know, it's like being asked to choose your favorite child. I mean, they each have their own merits and things to recommend them, but you don't really want to make one feel inferior to the other. So I'm going to just group them all through. I love them all equally. All of Eric Dyer's delicious tackles. I'm going to go with that.
Any of them that happened on Fabregas are infinitely better.
Yeah, fuck Fabregas.
Not that I would ever wish injury on someone, but if I were going to wish injury on someone, it would be him.
Yeah, he was pretty shitty during this match. It was not good. Speaking of tackles that Spurs made, Haley Bachrock on Twitter asks, who are we going to play against Southampton, given that our entire starting 11 is retroactively suspended?
Me.
Who?
Put me in, coach.
Put you in? We're going to put Ben
Come
Daniels
on, coach
in?
Gino.
What position might we even consider playing you?
Ben, are you going to be huffing and puffing at fullback?
I'm a leg-breaking defensive midfielder. Easy.
Oh, is that it?
I feel like you have to cover a lot of ground in that position.
Nah, you just crush a few dudes and then they don't even come near you anymore. It's that easy. You send a message.
You're not just going to stand there and try and give them lung cancer?
I mean, it's an option. You use all the weapons in your toolbox.
You're trying to win Spurs points for years, not just today.
That's right.
Next,
are we not going to actually answer that question?
No, we're not going to actually answer that question.
Hopefully, Clinton. I hope we play Clinton.
I don't think Clinton's getting starts this late in the year.
It's going to be Mason.
Ugh.
I mean, it's going to be Mason, but the other person is interesting. It could be Clinton. It could be Carroll. It could be Chopley. It could be Onuma. It should be Onuma, obviously.
I think against Newcastle it will be, especially if we've locked up finishing above Arsenal. But I am
disappointed that old Joshy has seemed to have fallen out of Pochettino's good graces.
I just don't think he's hurt,
isn't he? I thought he was injured for a little while.
I mean, we got Mason and other people back from injury that I just think he's not first choice sub anymore.
We might as well just say screw it and just play Bentaleb and Clinton and Chadley as a striker, and then, you know, Onuma, Cameron Carter-Vickers in place of Alderweireld. Might as well just go all the way.
All right.
We have to win a game first.
Our next question comes from Trayton Miller. I think this is very important. Michael, we'll start with you on this. If Dele Alli had played in this match, how many people would he have just cold-bloodedly murdered?
I mean, I think that the idea that this game was played in cold blood is a little off.
I can see Dele Alli doing that, though, just slitting a guy's throat.
Dele Alli looks cold-blooded when he does stuff because he's amazingly good at looking like that. But I think that the red mist is pulsing behind his cold blue eyes.
But still, so, do you think he's throwing in reckless tackles, or do you think he's like pulling a shiv out of his boot and just like piercing Fabregas's liver when no one's looking?
Exactly. That's the thing, is that like Eric Dyer responded to this by coming in high and late on a tackle on Eden Hazard. Dele Alli is a much more creative player than Eric Dyer. This is sort of the
in all facets of the game.
And you know, he is going to be finding moments during throw-ins to like come in from behind and throw a forearm shiver into someone's back. You know, this is the punch that he gave. I think I wasn't around for the discussion of it. I think the impressive thing about the punch he gave to Claudio Jakob is he very nearly got away with that. It was an extra camera in the ground, not in the sort of traditional set, that managed to capture it. If, you know, a year or two ago, a few fewer cameras on those grounds, he would have gotten away with punching Claudio Jakob in the midsection, just full on punching him. Like, he knows how to do this. He still shouldn't have punched. Punch wheel is bad. But like, I think we should give him some credit for how close he was to getting away with punching someone on a football field.
It's because he's such
way
a
to go, Dele.
It's because he's such a slight lad that it, like, why would he ever punch someone? Like, you know, you just couldn't conceive of it. Even though we have a long track record of supervillainy on his behalf. Yeah, I think he would have killed a lot of people. I think there's no way Dele Alli would not have gotten involved in Tottenham's killing spree against Chelsea this week.
I think there's only one person that Dele Alli would have killed in cold blood, and that is Eric Dyer, because he would have seen Eric Dyer's passionate, reckless challenges as some kind of flirtation that usually they keep behind closed doors, and he would have taken that personally, that Eric Dyer was like looking around at his other options. We've seen, you know, Dyer cut that out of his game over the course of the season as their relationship has grown stronger. So, you know, I think Dele Alli would have taken that personally.
I think you're looking at it differently. I think Dele Alli would have started a brawl that would have gotten them sent off. And then as soon as they were in the tunnel, they would have had passionate sex just right there. You know, they could no longer restrain themselves. And I think that's
Craig,
what
you can't make the subtext text.
Oh,
just let it float in the background.
I do what I want.
Innuendo, not in your endo. All right.
That's a Todd joke.
Finally, this comes from Drive-Thru Duck on Twitter. This is, I think, our most important question. Spurs heel turn yesterday most resembles which wrestler's heel turn in WWE history? Guys, put your feet up. I think I can take care of this one. The answer to this is Stone Cold Steve Austin's heel turn at WrestleMania 17. Where he teamed up with Mr. McMahon to beat The Rock because he wanted to be champion so bad. That is how Spurs just lost their mind because they wanted to be champion so bad that they just resorted to utter violence and probably concussing a few people. So that is the correct answer to this question. And I know you
nailed it.
Thrilled.
Great job. Great
I know.
Job,
I know. I thought I did a really good job too. Ben,
Spurs fan would think this was a heel turn.
It's a good heel turn. There's cool heels, Michael. Come on. Cool heels. You enjoy rooting for the heels. It's a 21st century thing. Come on.
I mean, Spurs fans enjoy rooting for the heels. This Spurs team just been healed. This Spurs team has just been like, you know, what? Like Sergeant Slaughter. Like, a Spurs player actually poked somebody in the eye during a fight. You only do that in professional wrestling.
Ric Flair is a time-honored combatant who has trained, yes, who has honed his techniques through tens of thousands of fights across the American South and also, yes, North Flair, Korea.
Excellent. Flair is the right gun.
That's Dele Alli. Dele Alli is Ric Flair all the way. And then finally, this is the set of questions for the order. This comes from our favorite questionnaire, cider drink. How many special people change? How many lives are living strange? Where were you while we were getting high? I'll just let anyone take this.
I still don't understand the reference.
We told you what the reference was when we were preparing to do the show. God damn it, Brian.
So just so everybody knows.
Give me a chance to listen to the song so that I could really fully interpret the quality
you
of the reference.
Repeated the lyrics to us, and we're like, is that why it's called?
Yeah, we told him it was from a song called Champagne Supernova, and Brian's response was, I don't know that song. I do know the one where they say they sing about a champagne supernova.
No,
is that
the
same
part
song?
About it was that it was like 5 minutes delayed where I was like, oh, wait, is it the one where they go, Champagne Supernova? Yeah.
You even know how it fucking sounds! Oh, my God.
The point is we're all high right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Ask me the question.
God damn it. God
I have
damn
no actual God. Answer to this question.
Ben and Greg got to talk about transfer rumors all last week, but no, I come on and we have to answer questions about obscure Oasis songs.
Maybe
you
should.
Obscure Oasis songs. Jesus.
And then if you had shown up last week, you wouldn't have been planning now.
Band, idiots. Couldn't have talked about an Adele song. Come on. Rolling. There's got to be something we can
What Adele song would you like to represent this season, Brian, since you're such a big Adele fan?
I don't know. I can't think of any Adele songs.
What's the one where she says hello a lot?
I think
hello?
Is that the one where she says hello? What a beautiful, terrible disaster this podcast has been. Much like this week for Spurs. Start off strong, kind of degenerate at the end. Kind of glad about how that went. Ben Daniels, where can people find you on the internet?
At Brett Rainbow on Twitter.
Okay, very good, very good. Brian, where can people find you online?
At Butt Rainbow on Twitter.
Okay, good to know. Michael, Kaylee, where can people find you on the internet when you're not big-timing us?
Yeah, no, I'm on other bigger podcasts, and okay. I am, of course, constantly tweeting SGMass from at Butt Rainbow.
Okay, and you can also find me, that's Skipjack, at Brett Rainbow on Twitter, and you can follow my alt-wrestling account, at Gary Rootbeer. Make sure you check that out, and send lots of gifts of WWE wrestling to that account. I always appreciate it. And on that note, for Ben, for Brian, and for Michael, I am Skipjack. Come on, you Spurs.